All right, what's up? Hello, hi, hello there. It's People Pleaser. You're back. You made it back for another week. Here's something. I blew right by this. I was planning on mentioning it, and I blew right by it. Didn't even notice that it happened. People Pleaser turned 3 years old. Did you know that? October 28th, 2019 is when the first full episode of this show, it was called Taste, it was with my friend Jess Kellner, that was when the first full episode of this show came out. It's 3 years ago. We blew right by it, blew right by People Pleaser's three-year birthday, didn't even notice it or do any aplomb about it, okay? But I've been doing this show almost on a weekly basis for 3 years now. That's wild, right? Crazy. We're getting up close to 150 episodes. I think this is like 136, 37, something like that. 36. So a couple weeks, or well, no, 14 more. So 14 more weeks. So a few more months, and we'll be up to 150. But 3 years. Crazy. Lot to get to in this conversation. It's a really thick, good conversation. My guest today, I'm really excited about. I'm excited I got this guy on the show. He's been killing it on TikTok and on Instagram, on social media with his sort of like takedown videos, his particular brand of how he responds to people in the socio-political commentary space. It's fantastic. And I was really, really glad that he was down to talk, and he killed it. But I want to just sort of prime you, the listener, just in case you're not privy to sort of the timeline or the story of what's really been going down with like Kanye West, Kyrie Irving, and now even Dave Chappelle. A brief timeline. So it's starting with Kanye West. First of all, Kanye West is not a stranger to controversy. This has sort of been a part of his public-facing brand almost his entire career. Even when he seemed to be on the left side of things, he was, you know, he stirred up controversy by saying George Bush doesn't care about black people on live TV when MTV was trying to do, you know, kind of like an awareness and funds drive on TV. They were doing a live presentation and he went off script and said George Bush doesn't care about black people. Then he also, you know, goes up at the VMAs, interrupts Taylor Swift in the middle of her acceptance speech. She's accepting the award for best music video, and the music video was for some music video that no one even fucking remembers because it probably wasn't that good. And he says, rightly, he's correct, he says, sorry Taylor, I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to let you finish. But Beyonce made one of the best music videos of all time. And that's true. Single Ladies, a music video that you have heard of and that you can think about. If I say Single Ladies, you can actually picture what the music video for Single Ladies looks like in your head. If I said what music video was Taylor Swift accepting the award for that she was interrupted, you don't know. You don't know. And neither do I. But it doesn't matter. His behavior was bad. You don't go up and interrupt someone when they're accepting an award that they shouldn't have won. That's just, you don't do that. But that's Kanye West. Kanye West's brand has been about controversy for a long time now. But most recently, the thing that Kanye has been on the tips of people's tongues about and in lots of, featured on lots of podcasts and lots of news shows and lots of social media posts about is, I think it really starts off with this viral photo of him and Candace Owens. If you don't know Candace Owens, that's another person we're going to talk a lot about. She's a right-wing talking head who they love because she's a black woman who came from the left, used to be a liberal, and was converted into conservatism when she saw the error of her ways. And that's just like, they love that stuff. They love that they can prop up Candace Owens and say, hey, look, we don't have a race problem or a misogyny problem. Look, or a combination, misogynoir. We don't have a problem with this because look at Candace Owens. So this really starts with Kanye West in a viral photo with Candace Owens where he was a guest of hers at some fashion show and they were wearing shirts that said White Lives Matter, and that obviously stirred up a lot of controversy. And Kanye went on a bunch of podcasts trying to, you know, break down what he meant by White Lives Matter. And he said a bunch of stuff about how George Floyd the story there was weaponized by Black Lives Matter to trick people into giving money to an organization that doesn't actually do anything to help black people, and that George Floyd wasn't actually choked to death, that they hit him with the fentanyl and it was a fentanyl overdose, and that he was a drug addict. And, you know, like these old narratives, even though like we all watched the footage of whatever the fuck his name is. I can't even think of the cop's name, and I'm fine with that. I'm fine that I can't think. McVeigh? McVeigh, is that his name, kneeling on George Floyd's neck while George Floyd begged for his life and said, "I can't breathe," and begged him to stop for nine. We've all at least seen part of that video, right? Anyway, Kanye West tried to downplay that, and as if that wasn't bad enough, he then talked about how he's sort of Teflon and immune to controversy and immune to consequences, and he said, "I could really say whatever I want. You know, I could say anti-Semitic shit, and Adidas won't drop me." Adidas has a very lucrative deal with Kanye to for their shoes, for Kanye's shoes, Yeezys, and he said, "They won't drop me." They did drop him. And he was, propagating, this documentary, that puts out the idea that black people are the actual Jews and that the Jewish people of today, modern Jewish people, have stolen the identity, co-opted the identity of the original Jewish people, so that they could sublimate them and put, and make them below them. It's part of this international Jewish conspiracy propaganda that has been going on since Germany in the 1940s. Like, it's dangerous rhetoric that he put forward. So that all happened with Kanye West, and it really probably hit its boiling point when he started putting forward these anti-Semitic conspiracy theories and suggesting that he was on board with them. So you think, okay, well, this is Kanye. This is just what Kanye does. This is Kanye being Kanye. This is Kanye looking for the most controversial thing he can say so that he can keep himself relevant, so that he can keep his name on the tips of people's tongues, so that he can be, you know, the title of my podcast today, so that he can be the topic that everyone's talking about. But then Kyrie Irving, who's also a person who's not, you know, unknown for saying stupid things. Kyrie Irving once said that the earth is flat on a podcast. Kyrie Irving tweets out a link to the documentary that Kanye West was talking about that talks about this theory that black identities were stolen by people a long time ago who now call themselves Jews, this whole concept. And people, and so reporters talking to Kyrie Irving after his game say, "Hey, do you want to talk about that? Do you want to apologize maybe for that? Do you want to address the fact that you tweeted out a movie that deals in some anti-Semitic tropes?" And he said, "No, I didn't make the movie. I just tweeted it out. I don't owe anybody an apology." Then when he was pressed by the NBA, you know, and suspended, he put out like kind of a forced apology. What was interesting about this is all of a sudden you started seeing all these people coming out of the works, people in, you know, the black community and definitely just talking heads on the right, you know, Ben Shapiro types, Dave Rubin types, Steven Crowder types, essentially suggesting that, like, more or less what they said was correct, that, like, they didn't say anything wrong, they didn't lie, and the fact that people are getting so mad about it is proof that this Jewish conspiracy actually exists. This is dangerous rhetoric they put forward. People actually do get hurt because of rhetoric like this. This is rhetoric that emboldens white supremacists and white nationalists and Nazis. This is dangerous, dangerous stuff. And it's, you know, it's not to be taken lightly, not to be trifled with. And then I think the thing that is the current place that we're at is Dave Chappelle hosted Saturday Night Live and went out and did a 15-minute long comedy. And I say that in quotes because I don't really think that a lot of things Dave Chappelle's been doing lately really qualify as stand-up comedy. He's just sort of standing in front of an audience with a microphone and letting everyone know his political ideas and his political leanings, and it's not really like funny anymore. He's just sort of saying, like, I'm annoyed that I can't say whatever I want anymore and that people are criticizing me for speaking. And anyway, I'm gonna let you hear a little bit of what Dave Chappelle said in his monologue.
I've probably been doing this 35 years now, and early in my career I learned that there are two words in the English language that you should never say together in sequence. And those words are "the" and "Jews." I've never heard someone do good after they said that. Listen, okay, I don't think Kanye is crazy at all. I think he's possibly not well. Well, I've been to Hollywood. I don't want y'all to get mad at me. I'm just telling you, I've been to Hollywood. This was just what I saw. It's a lot of Jews. Like, a lot. I could see if you had some kind of issue. You know what I mean? You might go out to Hollywood and you might start connecting some kind of lines, and you could maybe adopt the delusion that the Jews run show business. It's not a crazy thing to think, but it's a crazy thing to say out loud in a climate like this. It's a big deal. He had broken the show business rules. This is a rule. You know, the rules of perception. If they're black, then it's a gang. If they're Italian, it's a mob. But if they're Jewish, it's a coincidence, and you should never speak about it.
So, yeah, you know, I talk about this in the episode with JJ, but and in the conversation that we have. But, like, I'm a huge fan of Dave Chappelle's. I've done a whole episode on Dave Chappelle. I did a whole episode on his special that he put out where he was trying to tell everyone that he's not transphobic. He has trans friends. He says in that monologue, too, that SNL monologue, like, I got Jewish friends. Like, he does the same thing. It's getting to the point for me where I'm just like, I don't really know. I don't really know how I feel about Dave Chappelle. Because essentially what he's saying there is he's saying Kanye and Kyrie didn't say anything that's not true. They didn't say anything that's not observable. If you're in Hollywood, you observe that there's a lot of Jewish people there, and they do seem to have a lot of power. He's just saying the only problem that they made, the only mistake they made, was saying it out loud. Which is funny, because it's like, does Dave think that he's not also saying it out loud right now? Does he think that by dancing around it and not directly saying it, he's somehow not saying it? Because he's like, yeah, you're not supposed to say that out loud. You're not supposed to acknowledge that there is a international Jewish conspiracy to take over the world and to, like, run media and to run banks and to run money. You're not supposed to acknowledge that, but we all know that it's true. That's what Dave is heavily implying there. And it's weird that he thinks that somehow what he's doing is different. I feel like he thinks that, like, because he's a stand-up comedian, he can just say shit like this and just say, I'm a comedian. I make jokes. I was joking. But there's nothing in there that's really like a joke. He's just saying, I think that the mistake Kanye made and the mistake Kyrie made is they acknowledged the reality of the conspiracy out loud, and they shouldn't have done that. And people are laughing and stuff because it's SNL, it's a live audience. It would be awkward if people met him with crickets, and he's Dave Chappelle. He's a famous comedian. Like, but I'm like, where's the joke? What is the joke here? You're just saying, I more or less agree with these guys. I just think that they need to know that you can't say this stuff out loud because the Jewish overlords will take you down if you do. Anyway, we're going to get into this. We're going to break it down. I'm going to talk with JJ about it, and we're going to talk about, like, why? What is this? Is there a problem with anti-Semitism in the black community? I definitely know there is one in the white community. I definitely know that, like, white supremacy doesn't like Jewish people. But, like, I guess we're going to more talk about, like, how does white supremacy infect other marginalized communities and convince people, powerful people in other marginalized communities, to adopt white supremacist talking points? How does that happen? How do we get here? Is it just a mental health thing, or is it a combination of mental health and the delusions that fame afford you when you're in a certain position? I don't know. Let's break it down. Let's get into it. Let's do it, shall we? From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my new friend, JJ, J. William, J. Joshua Joseph, about, among other things, Kanye. All right, here we are, YouTube, back at it in the blanket fort, chilling. I'm here with a creator on the internet right now that I'm super into. I've been eating this guy's videos up lately. I've been consuming the hell out of them, and they're just so good. He's got such a good, like, bite to his the tone in his videos, and the way that he takes no shit from anyone. This creator does not suffer fools, does not suffer bullshit from anybody. On TikTok or on Instagram, it's J William J, and that's how you see him down there in the screen name. But he said I could call him JJ, so I'm gonna call him JJ because we're homies. JJ, how are you?
I am doing great. How about yourself,
dude? I'm doing so well. You managed to we were talking before we started about like Candace Owens. You got like, so you respond to these people, you respond to the Candace Owenses of the world, which is like a thing I've done, but it's rare that I actually get their attention. It's like I'm it's usually the people in the comments that are talking, but like she you got her noticing and responding.
That was insane because I didn't even expect to get her attention for real, because usually there's like levels. Usually when it's people who are primarily on TikTok and then I call them out, like of course they'll see it because they have to see it. Mm-hmm. But when you've reached that like upper echelon of right wing delusion, like you can just ignore anybody no matter how big they are. So it was a big shock to me when it went viral on Twitter and then she actually like commented and was like, oh, I'll be making a response to this. And I was like, okay, we're ready for war. And then she ducked and she hasn't and she hasn't done anything. So
I mean, yeah. Well, you ate through her shit like you said you were going to do in the video. You said I'm about to eat through your shit, and you did. And I don't think that she has a proportional response. The thing about your videos that's so good is like you go point by point, and that's what they can't do. They're really good at pivoting and shifting and just changing the subject or changing the parameters of the conversation. But like you stay on topic. You're like, well, let me just go point by point through what you said.
Because
I'm just gonna go.
It's very often, it's very easy. This is why the right, and I've been coming up with this theory of mine. I think the reason why the right and conservatives are so much more popular on platforms like YouTube and everything is, well, A, because like they have a lot of corporate backing, like financially, but B, it's because it's very easy to say very stupid things in a short amount of time that sound intuitively correct. So I could say 8 different things about how the liberals like equality until it's a gay person that disagrees with you. And like people listening to that, especially if you're already conservative, like, yeah. But if you think about it, it takes a lot longer to explain why that point is wrong than it does to just say it and assume people think it's right. So like
that's so much of what they do is just simple platitudes, just simplified slogans. That's like on the surface, that sounds smart. Yeah. Or that sounds like it's a good point that's being made, but like you got to keep digging, get into why that is, or get into why that specific gay person is being disagreed with in this particular instance. What is it that person said that is being because on the surface, if you just say, oh, so, you know, you're all about standing with these people, but if Christian Walker says something,
classic. I feel like conservatives are actually the original woke people, because it's like it's kind of like the meme around wokeness was just like it. I feel like it really started with the like you'll get high and then say something like, well, if why is it called a driveway but a sidewalk or so, like some stupid stuff like that, and people be like, oh my god. And I feel like that kind of stuff is like their entire platform. They'll just say something and it'll be like, oh yeah, what do you think about it? But like they don't actually dig into it. So in a way they're kind of like the really woke people, which is funny because they hate that stuff.
But, yeah, I had a conversation with a friend the other day who I think is like a really intelligent person. And this is a person who likes to push me on my beliefs and just likes to he likes to dig, and he likes to see if he can just get like, what are your sources on that? Why do you think that? And he leans right, and I indulge him because he's an old friend from high school. And if he was just some random person on the internet, I'd probably just block him or say like, I don't have the time for this, you know. But I indulge him from time to time, and we were talking, and like a lot of the points that he was bringing up, because he was saying stuff like, well, election denial happens on both sides. Like, don't pretend like Hillary Clinton didn't say for 4 years that she thinks that she won her election. Like, that's not the exact same. And I was like, on the surface, what you're saying, if I don't investigate any further, sounds smart, that both sides deny election results. Both sides have sour grapes. Both sides don't like losing. And if I just leave it at that, that like Al Gore thought that he won the election in 2000 and Hillary Clinton thought she won the election in 2016. If I just leave it there and say, and that's the same thing as Donald Trump saying he thinks he won in 2020. But the fact of the matter is like those situations are demonstrably, objectively different situations. Al Gore's election was so close in one state that they literally could not come to a final tabulation of Florida. And the Supreme Court had to step in and go, you know what? On a 5-4 ruling, we say George Bush is the winner of the election. Al Gore said, I think that's a ridiculous way to settle this, but I accept it. And he stood down and he let George Bush become president. And which is like, He's got a legitimate claim that he's making there.
I think Bush won Florida by like 500 votes, like in a state like, with multiple million casts. Like, okay.
Yeah. You cannot, like, it's crazy. And then, like, you know, Hillary won the popular vote and had credible allegations that we now pretty much have verified and seen are true, that like there was Russian interference in that election. So her like everything that she thought was iffy about her election turned out to be true. Turned out like there was Russian interference. We don't know how much or little that affected the actual outcome of the Electoral College. We can't actually verify that. But like her concerns are valid. Whereas in the 2020 election, like the guy got thumped. The guy got fucking demolished in the election. And every single thing that he claimed wasn't even like nothing even held water. And so it's like, yeah, on the surface, both of those things, if you just say, hey, look, election denial is not a solely right-wing phenomenon. It's a thing that both sides do. On the surface, it's like, technically, you're correct. But – and I think that's sort of like what we're talking about.
It's like that thing that you say where it's like, oh, they do it on both sides. Like, you can say that in 30 seconds. But if I had to categorically go through, well, this is what happened with Al Gore. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million votes, a pretty decent margin. And then even when it looked like she ended up losing the Electoral College, she conceded. The Democrats left that in the past. And then Trump's presidency continued. Whereas, like, Donald Trump lost both in the Electoral College and in the popular vote, had multiple justices that he appointed to the courts who looked into it, said that there was nothing found here. And then not only did he not leave it there and not concede, tried to overthrow the Capitol because of that. And then when that didn't work, he just keeps saying, oh, they stole it from me. And then endorsed hundreds of candidates throughout the years that also agree with that philosophy that it got stolen from, even though it's based on nothing. So yeah, what Hillary Clinton did is orders of magnitude less like severe than what Trump did. Even so, as like simple as she conceded. Like, she didn't hold up the election unnecessarily. She didn't say, oh, Obama, get the people to raid the like, no, she just conceded and then let everything go. So those two things are not comparable, but it takes a lot more time to explain than like just saying the one liner.
Yeah, I had a guy on the other week. We were talking about the midterms, and we were talking about like the talking point you often hear from people on the left, which is like the left is bad at messaging. Like, why isn't the left better at messaging? The right is better at messaging. The right is better at getting people unified behind their message. And my guess that day was like, it's not that the left is bad at messaging. It's that the left's message tends to be more complicated, tends to be like harder to communicate because it's more nuanced. Than it actually deals in reality. So you actually have to explain why a certain policy proposal is long-term going to be beneficial because it affects this thing, which is going to create room in this space for us to do, you know. And it's like you have to, it's not build the wall. It's not a chantable slogan. Yeah. It's not a simple thing. I also want to point out McJet in the comments here says pick the lesser of two evils, which this is a platitude that you hear all the time from people on the left, which is I'm voting for the Democrats because they're the lesser of two evils. I've actually gotten really tired of hearing that thing too, because this is another way that people will say, oh, well, there's corruption on both sides. Both sides complain when they lose elections. Both, you know, all this both sides-ism, isms. And I really, the more and more I spend in this space and the more and more I spend working in this space, the more I'm like, I don't see it as the lesser of two evils. I see one side as demonstrably, significantly more evil. Like I see one side as like...
I kind of went through the same like evolution in a different way where it was like, believe it or not, when I was younger, like when I was like real young, maybe like 11, 12, I kind of got like hooked into the whole Ben Shapiro thing where it was like, he'll go on college campuses and demolish some feminist or something. And like, I would watch that. And then like through like my parents though, I always knew that like I liked Obama. So like my entire worldview up until about 2016-ish was like, Democrats always good, Republicans always bad. Didn't know why, but I was just like, oh, I love Obama, so that's the thing. And then I kind of went through this phase where I was like, oh, well, no, they both suck. And then I'm kind of going back the other way where it's like, they're both bad in different regards, as political parties will be, because they're incredibly complex, like, bodies of political, like, thought that change over time. But when it comes to right now, there's not really a close, like, even though I hated Joe Biden, like, there's really not comparable between him and Donald Trump, like, at all. And he's surpassed my expectations. So it's like, there at this point, it's like saying that it's equivalent, while it might be like a good like rhetorical thing, because I've seen something, it's like I saw one funny video on my For You page recently where it was like someone just votes by choosing the funnier day. And I was like, but wait, because it's like if you have to understand that these things do have an effect, and voting for one side over the other is not the best thing if you're voting Republican, because that actually has consequences. But speaking to the point about it being like chantable and stuff, I feel like the reason why it's perceived that the right is better at messaging is because a lot of their things are culture war issues. So even when Democrats or like leftists or liberals have like a culture war issue, our stance on the culture war issue will be significantly more nuanced than even a Republican. So like they'll say something like going after trans people or something. And in order for us to respond, it's like, well, no, these people are completely valid because X, Y, Z, and here's the consensus medically, and here's everything, blah, blah, blah. And they might pull like Steven Crowder types, might pull like a study or two that could maybe say what they're saying. But as a whole, it's complete anti-intellectualism. They don't really care. They just say the thing that'll get people to chant. And once you look at, once you even take the little studies that they do cite and you realize the consensus completely disagrees with them, well, they don't care that much. So they just throw it out the window. So it's like, on every issue, the left is going to be way more nuanced than the right.
Right. It again, yeah. So I just saw Tulsi Gabbard today on Twitter saying that citing a study that said 80% of people who transition grow to regret their transition. And I've heard like studies like that before. And I'm like, that's just like easy to disprove anecdotally. Like that's just like a thing where if you're just like paying attention to observed reality, like how many trans people have you ever met? And how many trans people have you met who regretted their transition? Because I've met many trans and non-binary people, and I know zero. I know zero who have been like, I shouldn't have done this. This was a bad idea. So I'm like, just anecdotally, in my life, in my small sphere, and I think most people, if they just do like an internal, just does that sound right to me that 8 out of 10 people, that 80% of people who transition regret it? Does that sound like a thing that's true? But Tulsi Gabbard's got a study that says that it's true. And so this is that thing again where they can go, look, you have studies, we have studies. We both have studies. How can we trust whose study is true? And it's like, well, if we get into now what I have to do is I have to shift the parameters of the discussion into getting into your study, which is a thing you've done in your videos. You've been like, cool, let's look at the study that you're showing. Let's look at it. And oftentimes it's like, if you just go to the website that they're citing, you're like, it says here on the website that you're citing that this is like, there's information here that that goes against what you're saying.
That's like, why when we were talking before this started, when I was like the saying of don't attribute to malice what you can to stupidity. It's like sometimes I understand that, but a lot of times it gets very difficult for me to see how you can cite something, and like especially in TikTok we're using like the green screen format, and stand in front of it and tell me that this is what it says, and then when I Google it, that's not what it said. Like, what were you trying to do? Like, it could be that you just noped out of it after reading the headline, which I feel like most people do. But like, if you're actually trying to give me the contents and try to say, this is why I have the beliefs I have, and then I read it and it's not even saying what you're saying, it's saying like, what else am I supposed to conclude other than you have some reason to like just be malicious and not either want care for trans people or stuff. And it's like, and even if we accept like, oh, 80% of them don't even, because like if you Google that, obviously it's wrong. But if you even accept that, it's like, that's still not an excuse for not providing the option for healthcare to somebody. Like if someone's saying, I think that this problem is wrong with me or whatever, and according to the medical professionals, I should go forward with doing this, and I want to go forward with doing this. And then later on, they're like, I don't think I want to do that. Well, then that's them. You still have the option there for them to do that if they want. And you have the people there to consult to make sure that that's the right decision.
Yeah, so, if I did a study that said that, you know, 60 or 70% of people who get rhinoplasty regret their nose job afterward, like we should ban nose jobs because people are regretting it later. And that study would never be done because there is no like movement to invalidate the identities of people with nose jobs. Like, we don't really care that people get nose jobs, and that's them. Yeah. That's their, if they want a nose job, they can get a nose job. And if they, you know, like, and if they regret their nose job, oh, well, that's, they're an independent adult who gets to make that decision. But since there is a coordinated movement to dehumanize and degrade trans people, we get studies that skew statistics in a yeah. clearly biased way that goes against the consensus of the medical community, of the global medical community. I mean, this is like when people recently, a bunch of anti-vax people were saying that the WHO released okay. on their treatments for COVID that ivermectin was a treatment, and everyone was doing the green screen thing and linking to mm-hmm. on the site. It says right there, ivermectin, look. And if you went to the site and clicked on ivermectin, it said, this is not a treatment. So it just like had a list of things, and it was, and some of them like were, and some of them weren't. So maybe that's like a design problem on the website of the WHO. But if you click on it, it's like, this is not a treatment for yeah. COVID.
It's sometimes like, it's very contradictory. It's one minute, it's, oh, of course you want to cite a study from your ivory tower intellectual, like yeah. you're not here on the ground. But then it's like, when I can find a study that says some stuff that I think it says, oh, I'll put that there. But keep in mind, this is coming from the liberal. Like, bro, which one is it? I don't, yeah.
So how old are you?
I'm 18.
Yeah, God, my God, dude. That's so crazy. You're like... I thought you were at least like 20 or 21, but dude, that is nuts. You like you're out here fucking like tap dancing circles around Candace Owens, someone who's making millions of dollars to be a political commentator. I love it. I think it's fantastic. It gives me a lot of hope for the future. But also, like, I figured you were younger too, because you talked about being like 11 when you were into Ben Shapiro videos, but yeah. that was the era. There, a lot of people were, myself included. That was the era where the right was kind of owning YouTube. They yes. sort of had like this heyday on YouTube where they were like SJW wrecked videos and Ben Shapiro wrecks SJW, and like just SJW compilation videos of SJWs being cringe and stuff like that was the thing to watch on YouTube. And the right did a really good job of red pilling an entire generation. Yes. And a lot of people never pulled up out of that. And like, luckily I pulled up out of it, and it sounds like you did too. Mm-hmm. But like, I think what a point that you made that was really interesting is how you said that, well, why are these people successful on YouTube? Well, they have corporate backing. What's really, really cool is you hear this thing from right-wing commentators all the time that like the liberals own everything, the liberal elites, they own everything. They own the media, they own TV, they own movies, they own the music industry. And I'm like, look at our internet content versus theirs, because our internet content is like guerrilla warfare. It's like people with cell phones and like in like a, like people with no money and no corporate backing mm-hmm. and no sponsors, like talking from like poorly lit rooms and stuff. Like, I do my best. I try to give my show, but I'm like, look at Steven Crowder in his like studio with his like, you know, and they gave Ben Shapiro like his own network, like his own fuck it, like TV empire, you know?
And Candace Owens can go out and film a whole hour something long BLM documentary with all the problems with that documentary. Because I was thinking about doing like a full deconstruction maybe on my YouTube channel at some point, because I watched the whole thing, took notes, everything. But with all the problems with that, one thing that I cannot knock is that the quality and production of that stuff is so good that like, I, of course, if you're like a normie and you, and maybe you're already predisposed to not liking the organization or whatever, you're going to think, oh, this is the smoking gun. Oh, she really got him this time. But like, when you're in the know about all the things that she talks about, it's so bad. But the production is A1 because they have that money. Even people who are prominent on the left, like Hassan, Vosh, David Pagman, all of them, a lot of the times, even when they get up there and they get production, they're just infighting. Like, because a lot of the takes are very nuanced, and like the left isn't a monolith. Someone will say something, they'll get vehement disagreement or whatever, and then we're just kind of like punching left a lot of the times. The right is over there. I mean, it's not like it's all like sunshine and rainbows over there agreement-wise, but they will fall in lockstep a lot easier. And their figureheads have the production and have the cooperation and everything, where it's just like, yeah, but overall, even with that, I'd still say they're losing the culture war, which is why they think that the liberals and the left owns every corporation. It's like, no, it's just not cool to be racist anymore. It's just not. So
I mean, I think, yeah, absolutely. And I think that the reason why, you know, it looks like liberals own Hollywood or is just because in general, like, left-leaning people tend to make better art, because in order to make good art, in order to tell good stories, you need to have empathy, and you need to like be able to like approach characters from a diverse array of backgrounds in an empathetic and compassionate way, and you need to be able to like tell the truth. And people on the right struggle with those things. They struggle with truth-telling and with empathy and with like having characters with dimension. So I just think in general, like, it's more of an ideology thing, that which ideology lends itself to more interesting art than it is like a conspiracy of one side owning versus the other. Because if you actually look at like where the money goes, the right has way, way, way more support from big moneyed interests.
Yeah, no, it's hilarious to me, because it's like, for the same people, they'll always like go off about socialism and how, oh, we can't be a socialist nation, whatever. It's like, the things that you're complaining about, why it seems like the left owns all the corporate, it's literally capitalism at work. It's your ideal framework at work, meaning that all these corporations have realized that when culture and the change in American society or whatever, if they put their backing behind like Colin Kaepernick or behind whatever on social media, they can get a lot positive reaction, because it's like, oh, you're standing for these issues, which it's a lot more fashionable nowadays, instead of just saying like, oh, we don't care about that race issue because that would make it look like they're like racist or whatever. So no matter where their dollars are going, like McDonald's can talk about how Black Lives Matter this, Black Lives Matter that, but they're donating to Donald Trump. So it's like, economically, they are still very far to the right, because whatever gives them the most profit or whatever, which is ideally what you have under a capitalist system. But on social issues, they can say, oh, yeah, no, we stand with you, da, 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 even though they're not really standing with anyone in a different type of way. But the thing is, people don't want to acknowledge that. So they just say, oh, they came out on Twitter and said something pro BLM. That must mean the radical left owns everything. It's like, no, it's just that the narrative, it's just a lot less accepting to just be like, yeah, we don't care about Black Lives Matter. Like, why would they do that? It's a business model. They'd want to make more money. And if they can make more money saying the good things that'll make them more money, they will do that. It's not that complicated.
Yeah, everybody has a capitalist bias, not a left or right bias. Like most media outlets have a capitalist bias, like have a bias toward what is going to keep us in business and keep our profit margins growing. That is where the bias lies typically. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about sort of the overarching topic of the day. You and I talked beforehand about like how to talk about this guy. Should we be talking about this guy in society? Like, is it useful if you observe it and go, this looks like a person who's maybe not on his medication, who's maybe like, who maybe needs to be taken care of in some kind of way right now. And like, I don't know. It's kind of like when like there's certain things that like we can't help but talk about in society. It's like everyone to this day, if you bring it up at a party or something, everybody has a hot take about Will Smith and Chris Rock, even though it's like, it's like the take is that something happened that wasn't supposed to happen. And it was really wild for all of us to watch it, because like,
yeah.
And like both people misbehaved, and that's not a hard thing to say. It's like, don't hit people. That's not a hard thing to say. And like, don't make fun of people's like medical conditions. Like, that's not a hard thing to say.
Yeah.
And it's just like, those are two takes that it's like not complex and doesn't really require like, but like we all want to talk about it because it's a public facing thing of like, we're not supposed to see well-dressed people in tuxedos getting into
violence,
like fisticuffs on international television, you know? So, but everyone feels like they've got the take. And I'm like, I don't really know that I have a hot take on Kanye West, but what I think is maybe interesting about it is like exploring this way that like, how does white supremacy get to these people? And in Kanye's case, is it just mental instability? But like, where is the connection between Kanye and Candace Owens even to a certain extent, Kyrie Irving, or like how, you know, what's your general vibe on that right now?
So I've come about this in like a different way. I've been seeing my main issue that's been happening while I think that a lot of the discussion should be centered around like white supremacy or whatever. That's like the main thing where it's like, okay, how are we letting these ideas like fester or whatever? The main problem that I'm seeing is like people's willingness to accept terrible talking points or terrible ideas just because someone they like said it. So it's like, I've seen this thing where people were like, I saw this one thing on TikTok. It was like, it pointed to when Kendrick Lamar had some line or some thing on his album Damn about Hebrew Israelism, which is like the religious philosophy behind like some of the people who echo what Kanye says, although it's not all of them, but that's like a thing that is prevalent there. And they were like, oh,
that's the thing that's in that documentary, that right?
Yeah. Where they were like, yeah, they anyway, but they were saying like, oh, y'all lucky that Kendrick didn't come out and say this, because blah, blah, blah. And I was like, it's funny because I'm a Kendrick connoisseur. Like, that's my favorite rapper, like, of all time. Mm-hmm. So it's funny that people say that, because it's like there's ways in which Kendrick will go about things and say things or whatever. But if you listen to his most recent album, he also has a song talking about how, like, literally it's called Savior. It's about the whole, like, savior complex of celebrities, and putting them up on a pedestal and acting like they're infallible is stupid. And, like, you have to realize that everybody's a human being, too. So it's like, my thing is, I feel like if we followed that philosophy more, even with someone who supposedly agrees with Kanye or Kyrie on this or that, if we looked at the concept of treating people as people and accepting what their views or whatever is at face value and removing their status from it, then you'd find a lot more disagreement with Kanye West than you might think. Because I've seen way too many people, especially in the Black community, who just love Kanye West and are like diehard Kanye West fans. So he like comes out and does anti-Semitic like Jewish conspiracies, and they're like, but if you think about it, it's true though. Like, Kanye be knowing what he doing. It's like, we're looking at the same person. Like, I'm seeing somebody who's in desperate need of help, who obviously has mental like problems, and it's not like saying that people with mental problems like can't handle, like, it's just in Kanye's case in particular, like, you can tell it there, and that should be something that we're versed in, because we've had rappers that's lost their lives over stuff like depression or mental instability or whatever, like with drug abuse and everything like that. So it's like, you can see this person, and I'm seeing like, okay, he obviously like needs help, whatever. He might have some genuinely bad beliefs or whatever, but his filter, which is definitely affected through like the situation he's in. But it's like, people act as though he's completely in control of everything. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he's actually low-key right, because look how mad everyone got when he started talking about Jewish people. It's like, how are we looking at the same person? Like, you have to take a step back and be like, okay, if a white nationalist, if Donald Trump, if someone came out and said this thing to my face, would I be the same level of charitability? Or is it just because there's this person that I really like as an artist that I'm accepting these abhorrent viewpoints that have no proof? And the proof is a completely different discussion, because people actually think that they can prove that, like, oh, Kanye actually was making sense. It's like, okay, if you want to do that, well, you understand you're traveling down the same line of reasoning that Nazis use and that people like Hitler use. So it's like, we can get into the discussion on whether or not what he's saying is actually provable, which it isn't, and you will lose that discussion. But take a step back and be like, why am I so easily onboarding these views that I probably didn't believe prior? Probably because you just like the person.
Again, yeah, like, it's that same thing of like, on the surface, if you don't do any investigation, if you don't get curious about it, he said – so, and this was what a lot of people were pointing to is like, no one actually cared when he did the White Lives Matter thing, or when he talked shit about George Floyd and said that George Floyd was just a drug addict, you know, and that like George Floyd wasn't really choked out. Like, no one cared about that, but they did care when he talked about the Jews, and that shows you that it's true. And it's like, on the surface, it, like you said, it's the college dorm room getting high and going like, oh, but ooh, connect the dots thing. And it's like, yeah, on the surface, that sounds like an interesting proposition. But if you just go deeper to being like, no, what is it about specific? First of all, people did care when he people did care when he wore a shirt that said White Lives Matter with Candace Owens and like, I cared. I saw that and I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, my God. Like, I definitely cared about that. And I definitely don't like when people like Candace Owens and Kanye West try to look me straight in the eye and tell me I didn't watch what I watched in the George Floyd video. When people try to look me in the eye and go, oh no, he didn't choke to death. And I'm going, I watched it happen. I watched it. It's like people telling me that there wasn't an insurrection on January 6th. And I'm like, I watched it all day. I watched it. Like, what are you talking about? I was there. Like, not physically there, but I watched unbroken videotape, unedited, you know? So I definitely get upset at that. But like, the reason why suddenly there's an influx of people getting upset about his comments about a Jewish conspiracy is because it is the exact rhetoric that led to one of the like worst events in recent history, in recent history, like the genocide that happened in Germany. And we look at that and go, oh, whoa, wait a minute. That's a thing that we all should be in agreement on, that we're not going down that road. Yeah, but that's
another way I can go about looking at it. It's like, and it's funny because a lot of these same things, like Kanye West will say things he's saying and be like, oh, well, we as Black people got to do this, or like the whole self-responsibility, personal accountability type stuff that a lot of them like to preach. And it's like, okay, if I accept your framework and I completely ignore the systems and everything, and I say, okay, let's look at personal responsibility. If you're wondering why a lot of the reason why people got so offended and like what's going on about Jewish people when he said it, but not about Black people, it's because look at what happened when Kanye West came out a few years ago and said that slavery was a choice. It wasn't just the liberal media and the establishment people who might be running everything. It wasn't just they didn't give it 25/7, 25/8 media coverage. You didn't either. You went and listened to Kanye again. We all went and listened to Kanye again. He said all these things, and through us continuously supporting him, if we're looking at personal responsibility, he's still on my playlist. He's still on a lot of people's playlists. He said all these things, and what did we do? We said, oh, that's messed up, and went right back to what we were doing. So, of course, when you keep doing that and you keep doing that, it's not like he just dropped this out of nowhere. He's had this pattern of behavior. When you keep doing that, you personally, if we want to talk personally, are contributing to the normalization of that type of stuff, especially coming from him. If you might not agree with it on a broader level, at least you know when Kanye says it, we shouldn't worry about it. So then how do you then turn around and be like, but nobody worried about it? You were contributing to the whole, like, no one canceled Kanye. Kanye didn't see any drop in wealth. He didn't see anything every time he's done these things. So why is it that?
And there were definitely some people who were like, what did he just say?
Exactly.
And then a lot of people, like, for a while, it feels like we've just been going, oh, there goes Kanye again.
Yeah,
there like he goes
he,
again.
When he did the slavery was a choice, and then when he did the Trump hat and stuff, I immediately, like, as a person, I wrote him off. I was like, yeah, nah, I don't know what's going on, but this is bad. Like, what are we doing? And even then, I still saw some of the people I see today trying to justify it. Oh, well, Trump was about to do this for Black people. Or when you think about it, slavery was. It's like, why is it that all of you who try to say that the Black community is personally responsible for XYZ? You guys seem to fail to like want to actually look at things that we've enabled or things that you've enabled that contribute to this behavior. And you only care about it when it serves the point that Kanye was originally trying to make. So it's not, oh, maybe I was wrong when he said that slavery was a choice and I still listen to his music. But it is maybe the world's wrong when he says that Jewish people are behind it and then they get mad that he said that. So it must be true. It's like, wait, so then if we apply that same logic, then slavery must have been a choice, right? Because if people got mad at that because he said that, if we're saying that that means that he was right, then that means he was right, right? But you wouldn't agree with that, but you agree with the other thing. It's like, you can't come about it in a coherent way agreeing with the stuff that he does.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Yeah, that like if someone gets mad about him saying there's a Jewish conspiracy out there, you know, that means it's proof that there is. But if people get mad that he said slavery was a choice, yeah, that's a great point.
Crazy. It's like you can't, there's no way in which you can go about that without like and agree with all the things that he's doing or whatever in a way that genuinely makes sense, unless it's just you like the dude or you may secretly think and agree with him. So thus, like the thing. And then after we get past that, we can be like, okay, now what's the merit of what he said? It's obviously nonsense. But it's like, that's the reason why there's such a big outrage. It's not because the world's conspiring against you. It's because, like you said, in recent memory, something incredibly tragic just happened. And like, and on top of that, you could talk about historically, Jewish people have been oppressed literally everywhere in the most crazy ways. So of course, yeah.
Yeah. and I think that, look, to be fair, I think there is a conversation to be had about like disproportional reactions to things.
Yes.
And like I talked to you a little bit about this, that like sometimes I feel like, well, why am I speaking up now? And I didn't do a podcast when he said, you know, that slavery was a choice or like, or like why? And sometimes I feel like maybe there's a thing inside of me that's like intra-community violence or intra-community problems make me go, I don't know if that's my place to talk about that. I can have my private thought about it and go, geez, that's a fucked up thing to say. I don't know. I don't really know. I think there is a conversation to be had there, but I definitely think that just going, oh, not people getting upset about this, you know, it's like, this is what Dave Chappelle went on Saturday Night Live and said. He was like, essentially what he went on there and said was, Kanye and Kyrie didn't say anything wrong. What they did was said it publicly. They weren't incorrect. They just shouldn't have said that shit out loud. And insinuating that like the drama here is that they said the quiet part out loud, the quiet part that everyone knows, the quiet part that everyone secretly knows. And Dave said, I've been to Hollywood and I'm just saying it's a lot of Jewish people. I'm just saying.
Yes.
And I'm like, so I was going to ask you, you did say that he's still on the playlist. I was going to ask you, like, are you a fan of Kanye West? Because this is a thing, too. People always talk about, like, do you separate the art from the art? How do you do that? Because, like, you know, like, I'm a big Dave Chappelle fan. And this has been a problem for me lately. I've been going, like, do I even like this guy anymore? Like, it's been a while since one of his stand-up specials has made me laugh. And every time he comes out with something, I'm, like, really excited and hoping that it – that maybe it'll just be funny again. And he always winds up saying something that I'm like, I don't even know if I like this guy anymore. Like, I don't.
Yeah. It's like, kind of with me. I've never really been a diehard or like even that much of a fan of Kanye. Like, I went back and listened to some of his older stuff, because his older stuff is objectively like very good. Yeah. But like, when it comes to him being on my playlist currently, like even now I found myself having some like reservation. Like, I feel like I found myself skipping his music a lot more. Or whatever. It's just
no judgment, by the way. Like, I'm not, this is a complex thing, but
So it's like, I feel like it's, I don't think that there's ever a time where we can ever genuinely separate the art from the artist, because I feel like people have tried that. And I think I lost faith in that whole movement when I realized how many people still listen to R. Kelly. And I was like that dude has done some why, and like, and even that's not enough to get people to be like, yeah, I'm not gonna listen to his music either. So I feel like people just inherently, like, they'll probably, in order to, and I mean, I do this too, everyone does this, I feel like in order to make yourself feel better about it, you're just like, oh well, I like the stuff, I don't really like him as a person. But it's like, in a way, you're kind of supporting like his avenues, his like wealth, his everything or whatever, but you don't really see that as a direct connection, because it's like, what's he gonna do? I just listen to his music. It's
hard to escape music. Like, it's hard. Like, I was out on Halloween, and I was dancing with my friends, and like Gold Digger came on, and like me and all my friends like looked at each other, like, but we were like, yeah, like, come on, like, get down, girl, go ahead. Like, we were like, okay, it's like, it's good, but I mean, I have a fucking Michael Jackson tattoo on my right bicep. He was my idol growing up. He was such an icon to me. Like, I was a very, very skinny kid, and I was also like a pretty effeminate kid. And there was something about like someone who was like thin and super androgynous and effeminate and performed the way that he did. He was like my hero, and he was what made me want to be a performer. And for years, I denied and denied and denied in my head that anything ever wrong went down. And then I watched that HBO documentary, and it was like heartbreaking watching that, because I just was like, I think I've known this all along. I think it was always like staring me right in the face that like, yes, this guy did that shit. Like, yes. And I just was like, no, 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 no. And then it was like right there in my face. And I was like, damn it. And I have that too. And now it's like, when I hear his music, I still sing his songs at karaoke sometimes. Like, I still sing, you know, but like, I don't know. I watched the documentary on HBO about Woody Allen, and I'm not a big enough fan of Woody Allen to be like, I have to keep watching Woody Allen movies. Like, I was like, yeah, I'm good if I never see a Woody Allen movie for the rest of my life. Like, I'm good. But like, music's hard to avoid. It's hard. You're out in public and someone puts on Beat It and you're like, fuck.
I think that there's, I genuinely think that there's no way. I don't think there's a way to get around. I think that we should, that's kind of what my problem is sometimes with like canceling or like cancel culture in general. It's like, there's very often times where there's no real way. Like, even going back to the Kendrick Lamar point, like, as recently as 2015, he was denying like what Michael Jackson did or whatever, like in a song that I love or whatever, he says it. And I'm just like, well, we all know that he did it, but there's genuinely just no way you're going to get her. So I think the conversation needs to shift around like probably not trying to condemn yourself for listening to the thing, but like condemning yourself for agreeing with or supporting exactly what they were doing. So it's like, I don't think that you should necessarily feel bad or condemn yourself if you listen to Kanye West. But if you're telling me, oh, he might have had a point, you know, or it's the quiet part, just said out loud, that's when I'm like, okay, well, now you need to prove that. You need to explain to me exactly why you're agreeing with anti-Jewish conspiracies, because that is what it is. Like, we can have the conversation about, oh, am I bad for still listening? Like, no, you're not. But if you agree with what he's saying, now we have to have a conversation. Because it's like, I don't think there's a way we can ever, like, take the music and the artist and be like, all of it's gone. Like, I don't think we can do that.
That's a really good point. And somebody in the comments just, I think that's an excellent point that, like, it's okay for you to still enjoy the thing that you enjoyed. Mm-hmm. But if your enjoyment of it means that you're like choosing to willfully be ignorant of the mm-hmm. harms that person did or like the wrongs that they did, that might be a problem. That it's like, if your fandom of that thing blinds you from being able to say, no, that person, cause like, again, like I don't really care if a person's like, I'm a fan of Woody Allen's writing. I like his dialogue. I'm like, okay, as long as you can acknowledge that he did rape his daughter several times when she was very young. And that like, he probably did this to several, as long as you're aware that that's what, and you're not like saying that that Dylan Farrow's a liar and that she's been lying her whole life. Like, as long as you're aware of that, then go ahead and watch.
I think that that's possible to separate. I think it's possible to separate your fandom and like what they actually did. Cause a lot of times people let that happen. It's like, oh, I love Kanye so much that it's like, if I admit that he's wrong, it's kind of like admitting that I'm wrong. So it's like, but maybe he did have some truth to what he is like. No, once you stray into that realm, you're done. But like, you can
you're not wrong about thinking that song was good.
Yeah.
Like you're not wrong about like thinking that that was a good beat to dance to. Like those two things aren't the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody said in the comments, they said, this might sound silly, but I struggled with this and Harry Potter, but I found several articles that taught fans how to continue to be a fan without putting money in her pocket. But where's the line? That's interesting. I mean, yeah, it's the same thing. It's like so many people were like, oh shit, that's like my series. That's my book series. That's my movie series. And she's just the worst now. She just keeps digging the hole deeper and deeper. But it's like, yeah.
I feel like there is a conversation, a nuanced conversation about like exactly at what point is it harmful? Because it's like listening, say like taking like J.K. Rowling or like Kanye for that matter, like listening or reading, like listening to a song or reading a book, that's probably like, you're fine. It's whatever. Like, if you like buy memorabilia, like if I went out and bought Yeezys or something, like that's kind of signaling more of like a fandom, but I wouldn't say that, or like buying a book or like buying a Harry Potter t-shirt or something. It's like, I would say that it's not bad. It's signaling like you're more of a fan than like average people, but it's still not like, you can't be morally condemned for that. Like maybe you just really take a liking to it. But like, if you were like, oh, I can't wait to go like, I mean, even maybe going to a concert or going to like a meet and greet, it's like, cool. It's just in your head. If you're able to separate what they did from actually like what you like about that person, then you're fine. You're just fine. Because you could have all the Michael Jackson memorabilia like in the world. That doesn't mean you endorse like being a child predator, like at all. Like, and I feel like a lot of things that people complain about some people on the left is that a lot of times we do it the opposite way, where it's like, wow, you just made a comment about Michael Jackson. Sounds predatorish to me. It's like, well, no, because that's not reasonable. But like, there is a point in time where it could be seen as harmful. For me, it's arbitrary, but I draw that line as like, once you find yourself starting making arguments to like complicitly agree with what they did, that's when you need to take a step back and be like, okay, am I letting my fandom actually get in the way of what I know is reasonable and correct? Or am I just trying to find an excuse to not criticize the thing that I love?
That's an excellent point. I also liked when you talked earlier about like people who just agree with people because they like that person and they don't really think about it further than that, and they just leave it at the surface level thing because they don't want to investigate it and find out that they actually think that person's wrong because they like that person so much. I think this is the thing that made me want to talk about this, is I was just on Twitter after it happened and it was just sort of like blowing my mind. And I think this is sort of like my white privilege coming out, that I just assumed. And look, like, to be fair, and this is, you know, realistic, there are way fewer centrists and both siders in marginalized communities than there are in the white community, in white people. They're like centrism and both sideism is a very like white thing. It's white, you know. We talked about this before we started the episode that like, I know a lot of conservative people who are embarrassed to identify as conservative. Like they tell me they're not a conservative. That's not me. I'm not a conservative. But then when they explain their political ideology to me, I'm just like, you're conservative. You just are embarrassed by what that thing has become and what it looks like. So you don't, but at best you're a centrist. At best, like you are adhering to all of the ideologies of conservatism, but you don't like it. So in label, it's the way that you'd like to be thought of is drawing you closer to the center. But we see it in exit polling and stuff in the vote that like overwhelmingly people from marginalized communities tend to skew toward progressive ideology and progressive views. And there's an obvious reason for that. Like when you have been when you're inside of a community that has been the victim of institutionalized oppression for generations, it's very hard to ignore it or pretend like it doesn't exist or adhere to an ideology that tries to minimize or erase that institutional oppression. And white people have historically benefited from that institutionalized oppression. So it behooves white people to be blind to it or at least try to play both sides more often. But I was surprised at the amount of Black people on Twitter that I saw saying something to the effect of like, man just told the truth and people are taking him down for it. He's just telling. And I was wow, really?
I think that, at least in particular speaking to the Black community, I think part of the reason why that's the case, and I've tried to put a lot of thought into this, is that instinctually, or like, not instinctually, but I feel like we're more predisposed, at least the older generation in the Black community is definitely way more conservative. I mean, but that's just like a with age thing, like older people in general are way more conservative. But at least for the Black community, I think that a lot of the things surrounding like spirituality and tying our legacy as a people to something greater kind of lends a lot of people to be wrong about various things or agree with things that they probably shouldn't, that like are against their best self-interest, which is one of my problems with Black Hebrew Israelism, because like you can talk about it as like something you genuinely believe or like as a religion or whatever, and that's cool, but it's like I feel like the attacks, especially on the Jewish community, are coming from a place of a lot of times Black people as people who've been like oppressed or whatever in the United States. Because it's not like Kyrie and Kanye aren't saying that the oppression has existed or whatever. That's like their whole framework from which they're coming. It's like, well, they oppressed us. And the reason why they did is because we're actually God's children and we're the lost ones or whatever. And they're trying to co-opt our identity. And I feel like that is very specific and very like common in the Black community. And it's reasonably so, because it's like when you come from a group of people who you oftentimes don't know where you came from or whatever, a lot of times you feel the need to, it's like, well, people aren't just doing this or doing this in the Black community or whatever because they just don't like us or whatever. It's like, oh, I know plenty of white people that I like and everything. It's just that the Black community is hurting itself and we really need to get back to God and realize that we're actually God's children and they're oppressing us because they don't want us to know our real history, which I feel like the core driver of that is something that's cogent, where it's like all this stuff is happening, it's wrong or whatever, and they shouldn't be treating us like this. But the end to which you go, where it's like, no, actually, this group of people who exist isn't really that group of people. It's really us, and they're trying to keep us from that. That's the problem. So it's like, even though if you ask these people, like, do you think we should have more school funding? Do you think we should put more funding in the Black communities? Do you think we should shift how we our attitude towards drugs? Do you think we should shift our attitude towards like incarceration and stuff? They'd probably 9 times out of 10 be a lot more left-leaning than like a centrist or whatever. But when you get into things that like predispose you to those viewpoints, like certain like religious elements like Black Hebrew Israelism, that's when you get like against your best self-interest. And it's like, well, I don't care about all the policies we could do. I think that we should just get back to like the religious aspect, which kind of leads you down some very dark paths, and you find yourself agreeing with people who are saying the same things that white nationalists and Nazis say that would probably have you at the very least deported. So it's like, I feel like a lot of our time, our spirituality in some aspects lends us to very bad ends. Not saying all the time, obviously, because everyone can have their reasons and have good ends through their religious views. But I feel like in this case in particular, a lot of the reason why you saw that reaction is because of like the religious element to what Kanye and Kyrie have said. So a lot of people don't like check into it. They just go, oh yeah, no, this makes sense. Like, yeah, it's frustrating though. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously just being from a historically marginalized community doesn't mean that you're going to be impervious to otherism or tribalism. Yeah. Yeah. Like that's just, I think that that's like hard to avoid, that there's just a thing in us evolutionarily that has us clinging to what we know. And so I think that, you know, there are definitely elements of that in there, and that's an interesting, really good breakdown of that. I wonder if you have any insight into, like, how exactly do we get here with a Kanye West or with, like, a Candace Owens, because – or even with a Dave Chappelle, because with all of these people, you can see – I don't really know where – if there was ever a – like, Kyrie used to be saying that, like, the earth was flat and stuff.
Yeah. So I don't
– but, like, with all these people, like, you can – it's like – Kanye West used to be like, George Bush doesn't care about black people after Hurricane Katrina. Like, you know, and you see this like weird over time, almost shifting, like this like changing of position to a place where he, you know, he's wearing a White Lives Matter shirt and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with Candace Owens. A lot of people have gone into her history and gone like, she started out trying to be a commentator for the political left. And when that didn't work out, when she couldn't find traction there, she found she was getting more traction, espousing more right-wing talking points. Like, is it just a capitalistic bias? Is it just like, what's getting me clicks? What's keeping me relevant? What's keeping me at the top of the Twitter feed? Or is there something more sinister in the ways of like how white supremacy is a cunning elixir that is drawing people into an ideology that goes against their best interests?
I think what I would say is that like the whole ideology of white supremacy in both Kanye West and Candace Owens like aspect is like a backdrop. So like all the way back there where it's blurry. I think that like the white supremacy is there. What in Kanye West and Candace Owens' paths, the thing that, like, with Candace Owens, I think she's just purely a grifter. I think that she experienced what racism was or whatever, and, like, probably is in a unique situation where, like, something like that happens where you have to sue your school because of something like that. But I think that as she, because I feel like her content in the beginning was, like, a lot positive and, like, telling people how to live, da-da-da. But I feel like a lot of people can be predisposed, like, in the capitalist sense. It's like, okay, whatever's going to get me money. In her case, she's like, okay, I feel like if I do these hot takes or whatever, I can get some money, I can get some traction or whatever. She did that, kept doing that, and then she got picked up by a big conservative network, and now she's a millionaire, and which is a very easy path. I could tomorrow start saying exactly what Candace Owens is saying, I'd have $1 million by 2023.
They would love you. They would love to have you on their
show. They would be like, oh, he was a firebrand leftist, and look, he's over here now. I would have
love you.
All the money, but luckily for me, I have morals. So so I think with Kanye, though, and I don't want to be like an armchair psychologist, but like with him, a lot of his mental, like a lot of his trauma and a lot of his stuff, especially being an artist, is a lot more out in the open than like someone with Candace Owens. And I think speaking from at least Kanye's perspective, and I think that Candace has come to this in a roundabout way, is just the theme of self-blame. Like, I think we can see with Kanye, especially after stuff like tragic happens to him, like his mother dies or whatever. I don't remember where I saw it, but it's like anyone in that situation can find like reasons to blame themselves, even though it might not be reasonable or whatever. And I'm not saying that like what he's doing now is kind of an extension of that, but I feel like that kind of contributes to his mental situation that leads him to like this place where it's like, we don't acknowledge systemic racism. We don't acknowledge like all these things, these environments that lead black people to the outcomes. It's just the black community's fault. And even you'll tell them this and they'll swear up and down that's not what they mean. But when they say, oh, we got to do this ourselves, look how much we're killing each other, look how much da-da-da, you are implicitly suggesting that the reason all these things are happening in the black community is solely because of the black community. And they'll scapegoat this by saying, no, the racism happened in the past or whatever. Yeah, it did happen, but we have to look at today, da-da-da. It's like, well, where did it go? it didn't disappear. It didn't disappear. It still has a lot of effects. Because if you
no, JJ, Barack Obama was elected. We fixed it.
Exactly. Like, yeah. It's like, oh, he was there, so must means that. But it's like, you have to understand that these things are so complicated and take such a long time to form that it's very easy to say, oh, black person kills another black person, thus the black community needs to do better. Like, same thing that happened with Takeoff when he just passed away recently. It's like, it's very easy to say that. But if we don't acknowledge why a lot of like black people, particularly rappers who get successful, can never get away from the perpetual cycle of gun violence, can never get away from some of the things that other white millionaires aren't facing, then we don't understand the full concept of the problem. And just stopping it there and saying, well, black people, we got to do this, we got to do this. It's like, yes, we do have to do stuff. But you cannot simply just say that and A, not provide a solution. Like a genuine solution, because it's very easy for a millionaire to sit up there and talk about how you need to just get your money, you need to help the people around you. But that's not the reality for majority of people under capitalism or under any society. So until we do a co-ed approach where it's like, look at the system, how did we get here? What can we change to get better, further outcomes in the future? And what can we do ourselves to improve our situation? Until you go at it from both angles and you well understand both angles, you can never solve the problem. So I feel like the whole theme of self-blame, whether it comes from Kanye's trauma or someone like Candace Owens, who gets paid money to blame the black community or an element of herself for problems that it didn't create, this is just a thing that happens. And I feel like that backdrop, again, is white supremacy, because it's the white supremacy and the stuff that leads you to these talking points that can make these talking points seem okay, where it's like, oh, black people commit this amount of crime, black people are black on black crime, da da da. All those things are rooted in white supremacy, even though you don't want to acknowledge it. But the rationale you use is just, oh, black people, we do this, look at this, look at this statistic, we do this. But where does it come from? They never ask when, they never ask why, they never ask how. They just say, oh, well, this is the outcomes that I see in front of me. And that's the thing that I hate about those types of people. It's like, you're just saying the outcome exists and that's bad, but you're not saying why does the outcome exist. It's crazy to me, but that's kind of like my take on how they get there to the same place.
I've seen you do that in several of your videos where, you know, because man, there's no diversion tactic that I get more frustrated by than when people bring up, you know, black on black crime, you know, yeah. and Candace Owens was all too excited to talk about it when Takeoff died and, mm-hmm. you know, and to jump right. Oh, see this, you know, and you're always good about going, yeah, but you have to ask why. You have to actually look at the systemic, the history of systemic racism and institutionalized racism from a foundational level that still exists in our society that leads to these kinds of problems in communities. Mm-hmm. Also, just the fact that like intra-community violence exists in every community. That,
exactly.
Like, it is not a solely black phenomenon. Like it is white people kill white people at a higher rate than.
It's funny how like people buy into, like, you will literally just hear, like, especially with the Takeoff situation. If anything, Takeoff was a perfect example of why people like me are correct. Because when you look at what happened, he didn't actually even get killed by, like, some other person who was there to, like, kill him. He got killed by someone on his own side who was, like, firing and misfired or whatever and hit him. So when you see that, it completely destroys the angle of all these black people were just mad around each other and look, we're killing each other again. It's like, okay, why is it that people like a famous rap group like the Migos feels as though they need to carry around people with weapons around them like all the time? And you could say, oh, well, it's because other people are out to get them. Okay, why? Where do those people come from? Like people like PNB Rock who got killed. PNB Rock got killed by another black person because he was trying to rob him for his jewelry. Why are we in a situation where a lot of black people are disproportionately poor enough to do stuff like go and rob people and not even like see people as people anymore? Like, you can make that criticism of the individual's actions, but you have to understand where the individual's actions come from. Because people don't just come out the womb like, I'm going to become a rapper and have people around me like doing that. People don't just become a rapper and be like, yeah, I'm going to just talk about killing people and all this or whatever. Where do you think that comes from? That comes from their personal experience. They had to experience it. When a rapper's talking about how they saw someone die, it's not because they want people to go out and kill people. It's because they saw someone die. So it's like, I don't understand how we get to this place where it's like, all these things that are outcomes and outgrowths of the situation that black people are in are actually secretly black people's fault, But then you don't realize that that message is so like caked in white supremacy that it's like,
yeah, like, you know what I also want to know is like, what is the solution being proposed by the right? So the people that get taken in by this, but like when they just go like, oh, see, well, it's a community problem, it's a culture problem, and I'm like, okay, but what are you offering here as a solution to this? And they'll go to, oh, traditional family values. That like, if you're more like, you'll hear Ben Shapiro be like, you're much more likely to succeed if you get married and have kids and go to college. Like, you go to college, you get married and have kids, you're much more likely to succeed in America. And it's like,
and then again, you have to point by point it. Get married, have kids. There's a cost and benefit to doing all these things. How much does it cost to raise a kid? In what area will you be most likely to be able to raise that kid and then have them go to college, basing off of a high school education that's actually cogent enough to get them to the point where they're able to even think about college if you get a full ride, or to the place where you're financially stable enough to be able to afford your child's college. Someone like Ben Shapiro, who went to Harvard Law and has had to worry about anything his entire life. Like, yeah, it's easy for you to say, just get married, have kids. But like, you have to realize that there are things that you encounter every single day that lead you up to these decisions that you've never had to deal with.
Realize that what he's saying is be institutionally privileged from the moment you're born, from generations of systems that were built to benefit people like you and to privilege, you know. So be... yeah, generationally wealthy. Like when he's saying those things that sound so simple, but it really is. It's this way with so many things on the right where I'm like, what is the solution you're proposing? I even think about like with election security. I was all these right-wing politicians tweeting about how we need to change our election system and how our election system is so broken and how we need to fix the election system. And then they all like tweet a list of things that they want to be done to fix elections. And I'm like, how is any one of those a solution to the problem?
Crazy. Like, I'd much rather have the discussion on the left about like universal systems versus like means testing, because at least we have something that we want to do and now we're working out the logistics of how to do it. If you just tell me it's a culture problem, okay, how do you fix the black culture? A lot of them don't value education. What do you mean value education? You're talking to people who literally couldn't even get an education and were discriminated in every way, shape, or form from getting education up until maximum 70 years ago legally, and then we realize that schools have resegregated themselves because of how we fund public schools. So what do you mean value education? You can't just, they don't ever have a policy position, which is exactly why stuff like the red trickle happened the other day, where they couldn't even get the red wave, because you don't have policies. You have talking points on culture war issues, and when stuff like something like takeoff happens, you say, well, the black community, their culture. Okay, where do we go now? Where do we go? At least if I said...
yeah, what are you proposing? What is your solution to this? Why should people listen to you about this?
Like, exactly. Yeah. At least if I said encouraging, like, finding out a way to restructure how we fund public education, finding a way to make more job opportunities, maybe provide incentives to businesses to do startups in certain areas or whatever without gentrifying the area. Like, maybe if I said that, then there's actually things, even though it may not be the most specific things, that's things that we can look at. Okay, what's the data on school funding in different neighborhoods? What's the data on preventative measures to stop gentrification? Like, at least you can look at something. You can't tell me culture, black people need to do this, and then just you don't have anything to base that on. Because
I feel like we could do an entire episode on what you just talked about with resegregation. I think that's such an interesting concept that nobody talks about enough. The fact that like we have effectively resegregated our school system based on how we choose to allocate funds for public schools. And like, you can just see it. Like it has happened. Like and the ways that we have like redlined communities to be like, oh, well, this neighborhood gets this allotment of funds due to what their property taxes are. And like it aligns with. So, it just so happens that this is a predominant white neighborhood.
Exactly. It's crazy, like, because when you have policies that literally ensured that those neighborhoods would turn out that way, it's a shock that then when you draw the lines and you may claim how you did it blindly. That's not getting off into a tangent about critical race theory, but that's kind of what they try to get at. It's like you assume that these things were just done blindly, but look at the effect that it has regardless, because you ensured that these people are living in these poor neighborhoods, and now you're telling me that because they live in the poor neighborhoods, the school doesn't get funding. Well, surely we have to come up with a different way to do that, because you already set up the game to make sure that that was how it happened anyway. So it's like there, at least you have a way in which you can like talk about going about something when you acknowledge it on a systemic level, as opposed to just saying, well, you need to do this. You need to go start a business. You need to like there's so many other things that you're not taking into account. That's what I hate about that message.
Well, and again, it's surface level thinking. So a person on the right could say, what are you talking about? I mean, get real. Segregation ended 60 years ago. Like we did, we took care of that. There's legislation. It's in history. You can go read about it, Google it. Mm-hmm. But if you, again, on the surface, okay, yeah, we fixed that. So why is there still a problem? Oh, it must be cultural. And it's so interesting because if you keep digging at these people, they know it. They know that it's a problem. They know that the way that they actually think about it is a problem, because you're like, what are you actually saying? What are you actually saying? And get to it, because what you're actually saying is that there is something fundamentally broken in this race of people. That's what you're actually saying. And you don't want to actually, you don't want to go there. So you dance around it. You dance around it. But if you keep pushing, that's what they actually think. And that's what they're led to if they can't actually come to terms with the reality of how the system has been set up. Because surface level thinking says, well, if we took care of segregation 60 years ago, why is there still this problem? Why are people still choosing to be in segregated schools? Not looking at the fact that just that legislation alone didn't do anything for the fact that communities were still being divvied up through redlining practices and funds being allocated disproportionately, and that has still led to a system today where we are essentially still segregated in that regard. And that, I think that it is good to go off on a tangent on critical race theory, because again, critical race theory, a thing that is not being taught in elementary schools or junior highs or high schools, but should be a thing that maybe should be taught in a little bit more in lower education, because not understanding the ways that our society at an institutional level has been set up to benefit certain people and disadvantage other people is the problem. And the solution that people on the right are proposing is less awareness of that, less discussion of that, less education on that. It makes me it makes zero sense.
That's my thing, is like, and even when, if you just simply, you'd be shocked, and if anyone wants to try this, you'd be shocked at how many people will like engage with you on this discussion, especially on the right. And if you just use the Socratic method and just keep asking them why, you'll be shocked where they go, because they'll get to a point where it's like, the only answer is either it's going to be genetics or I have to assume that it's like something with the system. But they won't do that. They'll circle back to like something like, I don't know, black abortion rates, even not realizing that that's a product of the system too. So they'll do everything to not like actually acknowledge what the real thing is, but then stop short of just flat out blaming black people for it. And it's crazy to me. It's just like, and even like stuff with like critical race theory, even though they just assume that it's any cringy lecture that someone talks about white people just must be critical race theory, which it isn't. Right. It's like you have to acknowledge how the system was built or whatever, how the system continues to be perpetuated, even if we assume that everyone in it is an honest actor and nobody is like racist or anything. It's like it's a very my camera battery died, I gotta replace the battery. But it's a very easy thing to try to get caught up in without like acknowledging anything, because it kind of makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. It's totally wild. One thing that we've touched on it, we've talked about it briefly. We've definitely, I think it's because neither of us actually really knows what the no one can really say what's going on with someone's mental health, but like, yeah, the abortion rate, that's something that Kanye really likes to talk about. But one thing we haven't really gotten too deep into is like the mental health aspect of all of this. And that part of the conversation. And again, it's probably because it's like, it's hard to actually say what's going on with anyone else's mental health. But I will say this just briefly to touch on it, that there's probably no worse situation for a person with untreated bipolar disorder to be in than to be one of the most famous people alive.
Yeah. Like,
bipolar disorder is already a condition that one of its like trademark textbook symptoms is delusions of grandeur. Like people who think like, oh, I'm getting messages coming through the radio that I'm hearing that are transmissions from the FBI. They're telling me that I'm like their lead undercover agent, that I need, you know, like it's very grandiose thinking of like, oh, there's this, I'm being called. I have this very specific calling in the world, and I'm, you know, people will have ideas that they're a savior or something, or that they're like meant to be a king or meant to be someone great. There's maybe no more dangerous situation for a person with that particular ailment to be in than to be a person whose face is on every magazine and on billboards and who, mm-hmm. you know, is the topic of discussion on everyone's show.
Yeah, because I'm willing to bet that a lot of these people already have somewhat of a, like a savior complex in the same way where it's like, because you are everywhere, like it's natural to assume like, oh, this is like, obviously I'm like that guy. Like obviously you're like a billionaire and you're famous, you're a rapper, whatever. You have people reassuring you of that all the time. But it's like, when you combine that with that like whole thing, it's very hard to snap yourself like out of, or like help yourself. And then when people are like, oh, you should have help or whatever, you should be on your medication, da da, then it's like, oh well, now I got conspiracies about the medication too. It's a very dangerous cycle to definitely be put in.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to touch on that. You know, I don't really want to go too deep into it or try to like psychoanalyze or try to diagnose, because I'm not a mental health professional and I don't think either one of us is. And I don't want to try to like break down footage and be like, see here, this is a thing that he's doing that, you know, like I think it's worth mentioning to just talk about like that aspect of it too, that, that there is that, you are such a impressive person and such a you're young and I don't want to put anything on you that feels like pressure. Like I don't want to, this thing I'm about to say, I don't want you to feel like now there's like a pressure to perform or do anything, but like, I just see such a bright future for you. Like I just am like, my God, 18 years old and you are so aware and like in tune and well articulated about your positions and about your points. I just like, I really feel like you could go move some mountains and change the game and like be it, but also like you don't have to. Like I just I don't want that to be pressure on you to be like, oh shit, well now I gotta do something, otherwise I'm gonna feel like a failure my whole life. Like I just wanted to say it as a compliment that like I just think you're really fucking smart and like a really impressive person to talk to, and like I thought you were like 21 or 22, and to find out you're 18 years old, I'm like, my God, dude, that's like half my age, and like it's wild. So
no, thank you so much. It's not pressure though, because I plan on doing it anyway. We operate well under pressure here, so like, yeah.
All right, great. Well, when are you like when are you gonna like run for office or so, or get your own show? That's what you need.
I've had a lot of people tell me that is like, oh, you should have your own show. If there was some entity out there who could like give me the backing of like the conservatives and give me my own like high production show, oh, it'd be done out. But when it comes to running for office, you know, I've been really trying to think about like my scheduling for that, because I know I mean, obviously I have time to figure out, but I know I do want to go to law school. And funnily enough, we did just talk to a lawyer in my law class today. And he was like, if I could recommend something, is like do law when you're young, like go to law school when you're young or whatever. So I'm thinking either, it really depends, but I think the two ways I see is either I might run for office like early, like that 25-year-old that just won in Florida. Like that was crazy. And I was like, okay, there's a shot that I could do it that young or whatever. But also it could be like out of law school or whatever, like, after that, maybe. It's still time for me to work it in, but I definitely am going to run for office at some point.
Okay, so that is an aspiration of yours. You would like to go into politics?
Yes, yes.
Amazing. You've got my vote. Like the second thing that you do, that's awesome. People have been asking, this is something I talk about a lot on my channel, and people from time to time ask me if I'm interested in it. I've never been, I mean, I'm an actor and a musician. Like, yeah. I've never been interested in it, but this is the first year of my life that I've been like, maybe I have to, like, maybe they just need more people.
No, for real. Cause I'm sick and tired. Like one of the things that I'll hate when I know that I need to run in politics for this reason, is cause I'll watch debates between candidates and like the Republican or someone, or even the Democrat will say something. And I was like, I know exactly how I'd respond to this right now. And none of them ever say it. Like, it's crazy to me. It's like when I was watching the debate between Charlie Crist and Ron DeSantis. And it's like this dude, Charlie, just letting him get away with like everything that, like, he was trying his best, but it's like there's so many things. And the one with Marco Rubio in his debate, I was like, even then they managed to make it bad for themselves. But there's so many things you could press these people on that they wouldn't be ready to respond to in time, because they're used to this whole, oh, we're just gonna be civil, we're gonna be nice, and I'm just gonna get out and say all my lies and not get pushback. Like, they might say some platitude, but they're not really gonna push me back on it. That, I'm sick of it. I'm so sick of it. I want the Democrats to be much more aggressive than they are. So, like, if anything, that's the reason. Because I want to get on that debate stage with somebody who I know, like, their platform and all the things, and watch them try to, like, weasel around stuff. Because they'll do that till the end of time.
So, well, it's sort of like that's like sort of who Trump was for conservatives. Yeah. Is they were like, we just like that he's not talking like a politician, and that he's not trying to do – you know, he's not using the same language that they all use. He's just like, gloves off, I'm gonna go for the jugular. And like, and even if I'm just, everything I'm saying is just like nasty and bullshit, like, I'm gonna be aggressive about it. And people liked that. I mean, Dave Chappelle in his SNL stand-up thing, he said a thing about Trump that it kind of bothered me, because he was like, I think he's an honest liar. Like, he got up on the debate stage and he said, I know that the system is corrupt because I use it. And to a certain extent, I was like, I know the debate that he's talking about. I know it was in 2016, he was debating Hillary Clinton, and he said to her, like, you haven't done anything about the corrupt tax codes that I know are corrupt because I use them. He's like, I do. He's like, and I made a lot of money off of them. He's like, but when I get in there, I'm going to actually rewrite them so that they're a little bit more fair. He's like, you had plenty of opportunities to do that and you didn't. He's like, because they benefit you too. And Chappelle was saying that he was really impressed that the guy was honest about the fact that, like, the game is fixed and it's corrupt and that he's benefited from it. But I was also like, I don't like that you're, like, giving him credit as being an honest person, as though he hasn't built his political career off of, like, just a Mount Everest of lies.
That's my thing. Like, it's like every single even underhanded, like little prop you can give to him, it annoys my soul, because it's like, even in that case, you're wrong. Like, I talked to somebody recently and they were like, oh, I don't like him as a person or whatever, but he, like, the whole I don't like him as a person, but he's a good businessman, or he's da, da, da. And I'm like, even with that, like, I could be really petty and go into his bankruptcies and everything, but it's just like, okay, you can have someone who's a good businessman, but what did they do? You guys elected him on this, oh, yeah, he's going to go out there, root out the corruption. I don't know how you thought a billionaire who's been taking advantage of tax codes and fraudulent real estate investments since he was essentially born. I don't know how y'all thought that this was the guy who's going to root out the corruption, because he's corrupt himself. Like, of course he wasn't going to do anything, but, like, he talked funny. So I feel like what the left really needs, especially in a political candidate, is somebody who's as, like, bold and like aggressive and like not taking shit, like as Trump was, but except for it's based in reality and like factual evidence. Like, I rarely see a candidate say something that's a bald-faced lie on the stage and someone actually go out their way to like prove, like, well, no, what you just said was like factually incorrect, because they'll usually be like, ah, nah, we don't, you're wrong, you're lying, da, da, da. But it's like, you have to get through to these people and be like, no, this is why this person is deceiving you and mischaracterizing XYZ. But I don't ever see that. And it's like that on a debate stage with Trump would be, if you had the swagger with the also, here's why you're actually dumb. Like it would go crazy. Like, and I don't think people like realize that. Like, that's how you avoid people like that.
Is there anyone in the game right now that you look at and go, like, we need more of that? Like, is there, like, I mean, like, how do you feel about, like, AOC or, like, Beto O'Rourke or, you know, Bernie Sanders? Like, how do you, like, or do you think that everybody's just, like, playing the game and that we need more straight talking?
I love, like, I obviously like AOC and everyone, even like someone like John Ossoff, even though, like, they're better than what, like, the Democrats are. And I'd say, like, AOC and Bernie are, like, leagues better. But, like, even sometimes, like, they can lack in their, like, rhetorical strategy or whatever. That's why a lot of people, like, I personally would love to see AOC run for president. Do I think that she would win, like, now or maybe in even the next three elections? No, because I feel like she's like, not too polarizing, because I hate that. But it's, like, she doesn't really have a platform or like the rhetorical strategies to actually get that platform across to enough people to where it's like a run for the presidency would be viable. Because if she ran, then like all the Democrats would just swarm and be like, social, like the same stuff they did with Bernie Sanders. But even Bernie didn't have like the obviously you can get to the point where it's like a lot of people just genuinely didn't agree with it, and maybe it wasn't like the time. But like a lot of times the left doesn't help themselves, at least in national politics, when it's like the rhetorical strategies and the things you need to be able to do to get through to people and make it realize like this platform is actually something you would genuinely like and like something that you'd agree with. And it's very cool being like, oh, here's my policy positions, da da da, and we should do that. But you have to also couch it with aggression against the other side, like genuine, like not like hate or anything, but it's like if they're going to stand on a debate stage and say something that's like demonstrably false, you have to find a good creative way in making sure people realize like these people are lying to you, or these people are like whatever interest they have, like find a way, because politics at the end of the day is about power. And that's something that the right has gotten, but the left still has like a little bit of trouble with, especially the Democrats. Like they try to be like, oh, we're not going to do that. We're not going to pull that lever, even though the Republicans have done it too, because we just don't like, it's like, no, if you got the power, you need to make sure you have it and you have to do this to help people. Like, I'm sick of the whole like dancing around it type stuff. Like you have to be pointed, but I do like some people. I don't think any of them are like the best or like the perfect candidate or whatever, but I don't think you can ever get that really.
Sure. I for one am really excited that you have lofty aspirations, because I think that you're the right kind of person to have lofty aspirations. I just think that you have like a really high ceiling, and like I'm excited to see where you go, and I'm excited to keep following the journey. I'm really excited that I got you on the show, and I hope to have you on again. Like, I just thought this was fantastic. I thought that you absolutely crushed it. Where can people follow you on the social medias?
Sure. If you guys are wondering, you can follow me at JWilliamJ on TikTok, the same as my username right there. It's JWilliamJ8 on Instagram and Twitter. I think that's about it. Oh yeah, JWilliamJ on YouTube too, because I do have a YouTube channel that I need to start uploading on. But thank you for having me on. I appreciate everything. I appreciate all the compliments. It's very cool.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. This was fantastic. Good chatting with you. I hope to have you on again soon for something else.
You too, man. I will be on anytime.
All right. Awesome. Nice chatting with you, JJ. Have a great rest of your day. And thanks everybody in the comments for commenting, for being here. We'll see you at the next one.
See you guys.
I genuinely did not know that kid was 18 when I asked him to do the podcast. I'd been following his content and watching his videos, and I thought he was like in college, 20, 21, maybe 18 years old. Can you believe that? Can you believe the confidence with which that young man speaks, and the intelligence with which he speaks? I mean, shit, dude. Bright future right there. All right. Like, I know you heard that. I know you were listening to that going, oh, and I know after he said he was 18, you went, what? Because I've been sitting here nodding my head. Because I also know you know some dumb 18-year-olds. I know you know some dumbass 18-year-olds. And that you were like, wow, the 18-year-olds I know are not this smart. That's a special young man right there. And I'm really, really glad that I got to talk with him. I hope he does the podcast again. Go follow him, JWilliamJ, at JWilliamJ on TikTok, at JWilliamJ8 on Instagram. The guy is really doing it. He's the real deal. Go check him out. What are your thoughts on the discussion? Let me know. I think that's it. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Any of those places, Spotify, Apple Music, all that stuff, okay? Patreon.com/Austin Archer. Hey, Patreon patrons, love you. How are you? Cool. All right. Have a good Thanksgiving. I hope it's fun. I hope that you have good food and that nobody gets in too big of fights. Be nice to yourselves. Be nice to each other. Love you so much. We'll see you next time. Okay, bye-bye.